Okay, so we should go ahead and jump right in and get to work. So this is the local government of the future subcommittee meeting of the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations. I'm Brendan Sharkey, the chairman of ACIR, and our vice chair, Lyle Ray, is also on board with us, as well as other members of ACIR. We have an agenda, which Bruce was good enough to send out to everyone in advance. But before we get to that, I just wanted to remind folks, this is a public meeting and it is being recorded. So be mindful of the fact that if you'd like to offer comment or questions, please indicate so as much by either waving or virtually or in person and to be recognized. And our names, I think, are otherwise visible for anybody who might be viewing this online. Okay, so let's see. We just to jump right in, I think it would be helpful if we did a quick summary of where we are legislatively following the special session that just was done last week and completed last week. The quick update was that at our last ACIR meeting, it was the Friday after CNADA of the regular session. And at that point, House Bill 6448, which contained our provisions for the RPIP 2.0, as well as an item that we're going to take up later in this meeting, were not passed. It had passed the House, but had not gotten through the Senate. Subsequently, at the special session last week, that bill was incorporated in its entirety in the budget implementer bill, which did in fact pass both houses with some back and forth between House and Senate, which had nothing to do with our provisions, and ultimately now has been passed and is, if the governor has not already signed it, he will be doing so shortly. So we're on our way. RPIP 2.0 will be the law of the land, and we also have an additional obligation now that was incorporated in HB 6448, which we need to take on in terms of an additional study. So I don't know if anyone wants to add to that update. Martin, in particular, did you have anything more to add to that?
Sure. Thanks, Brandon. The only other piece I would mention is, as you know, you had mentioned, you kind of probably already mentioned it with the you know, the RPIP, you know, was in the 12.02. We did get that included there, you know, as well as, you know, Section 168, which might change section numbers once we get the final, you know, bill out for, you know, the meeting provisions there, which ACIR was very helpful, you know, during the executive order process and everything else. Thus why you see, you know, on there that it's including the municipal attorneys, including FOI commission, and including ACIR, you know, in this study review of it, because these were all potential, you know, these were all important players as we, you know, made it through the executive orders and everything. So I think that, you know, does cover up, you know, 1202. So.
Yeah. I mean, that is a significant obligation that I don't think we were fully aware of at the time the language was being adopted. But, you know, it's certainly our job and in our wheelhouse to be doing these kinds of things. So, and it's a fairly significant obligation, as Martin's saying, with regard to pulling together the various other groups that will need to be convened to conduct the study for February 1st of 22. So there's a lot of work to be done on this. for sure, with not just ourselves, but a lot of other folks as well. So I think we, I, again, this is a little bit later in our agenda. Maybe we can just bring it up now if folks are willing. The language of that provision, of that section 168 provision, I'll read it aloud for those who are not, who don't have it in front of them, but it specifically states the Connecticut Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations shall, in consultation with the FOI Commission, the Connecticut Association of Municipal Attorneys, and the Chief Information Officer of, Chief Information Officer's designee, Connecticut Association of Municipal Attorneys and the Chief Information Officer, or the Chief Information Officer's designee, we shall conduct a study concerning the implementation of the provisions of Section 163 of this Act, and the feasibility of remote participation and voting during meetings, including remote voting using electronic equipment such as conference call, video conference, and other technology. And we should submit the report by no later than February 1st to the General Assembly. The report shall include, but need not be limited to, findings, including the challenges encountered, recommendations concerning best practices for the implementation of said provisions, an analysis of the feasibility of remote participation and voting during meetings using electronic equipment such as conference call, video conference, or other technology, and the identification of funding sources for the implementation of remote participation and voting during meetings using such electronic equipment. So the big debate over this other provision, Section 163, as it's being referred to, was not so much an objection to the idea in principle of creating hybrid meetings among within municipalities, but more about the, well, two things. One is the funding. How is this going to get paid for? And, you know, if municipalities have to go to some expense in creating this hybrid system. I guess the other question that was also being raised was, and that I've heard from other municipalities, is, you know, to what degree are our towns going to be expected to be offering this for every commission and every board of every town? Does the local, you know, dog catchers commission have to be offering hybrid meetings online and in person, particularly when multiple meetings in towns are going on at the same time? You know, are there some parameters around which maybe it's just the most important commissions or certain designated commissions? And I don't know, Martin, I mean, you were more directly involved in the discussion. Am I characterizing that correctly as to some of the questions that still need to be fleshed out on this?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's good that there is way language kind of wound up with compromises between, you know, legislative and everything else, is that it's particular agencies, you know, that have to comply by the certain date and everything, and then, you know, moving forward. Piece on the funding, you know, most don't see that as an issue because municipalities have already been doing that throughout all of COVID. I mean, yes, there are a few additional things that they may have to, you know, do, but there's actually funding through LOSIP that they can use for technology. They also have, their municipal CRF funds and the ARPA funding to be able to use for this, you know, function. So it's not necessarily cost is a issue because there is funding mechanisms out there for this already. So just as a kind of a clarification on that.
And what was the discussion? So, John, I'll catch you in a sec. What was the discussion, though, about, I kind of wasn't following it at that granular level, as to some commissions are more important than others and therefore we can designate. How was that worked out?
So basically they looked at it and kind of a quick summary off the top of my head was kind of looking at those that are more like regulatory, finance, zoning, those that are having to do regulatory versus some that were just more like advisory. So those that were in the list were more regulatory type boards that are decision policymakers, but those are the ones that they included in the listing.
Okay. All right, John.
I just go back in time when we were putting together the recommendations, sort of the best of the executive order recommendations from ACIR. At least one version of the bill that I wrote had it so that we had put in, I don't know, like the town council, board of selectmen, board of finance, boards of education. We identified those top tier that should be in that group that would be in that remote or hybrid piece as opposed to doing everything. So we did fairly early on look at that whenever that was done last fall. So somewhere there's a version of that we looked at. I guess my second point is we really only have 6 months to do this, which is not a lot of time.
Yeah. What is the sense of the group as to how we should organize this? I mean, part of me thinks that this falls certainly under local government of the future, right? There's nothing more government of the future than this. Clearly the subcommittee, I think, will have to be responsible for this. John, how do you, in terms of best practices, do you think that given the work we've already done, the commission has already done mostly through your good work, do you think that we've got the bandwidth to, schedule series of meetings with the other folks that we need to consult with? Should we maybe have those folks come and visit meetings to get their input, or should we all be working kind of in tandem? Not sure. I'm trying to think of how the organization of this should happen.
I think from what we did with the best practices and what's been in place in practical sense with area size communities, that we have a very good starting point to bring together then those other groups, so we have a foundation to start with instead of just saying, okay, just try to create it out of whole cloth. So I think we do have a very solid starting point. We've got communities, whether it's a smaller town like Goshen or a larger town like a West Hartford that have these practices in place, and they know where the challenges are too. We've heard, about town meetings and some of those. So we've got real world experience with it that we can tap into.
So can I add something before we get too far? I think we need to organizationally think about this. And again, I think we need to think about leadership in a working group just for this report. I wouldn't assign it to this committee. I would say that this is a big enough task and a specific enough task that you may want to compose leadership for this particular report, whatever members of ACIR want to participate, and then that broader, the statutorily named entities, et cetera, into a specific report working group. That's my suggestion, so that we would do that pretty quickly. And whether you or John or someone else wants to lead the overall effort is fine. But I think composing a working group for the report, open it up to whatever ACIR members want to be there, include the statutory folks, and then get on with it. That's my organizational tidbit. So sorry to jump in, but I wanted to get off my chest. So
sure. Margaret.
I agree with Lyle. I agree with John. And I think Brendan, you must do the elected, whatever it is, however you put it. And then you may, if others need to be heard, like the building committee and whatever, but leave it to the town.
Right. Okay. So maybe what we can do, I think you're right, Lyle. The more, I think you articulated that pretty well. Maybe the next step of this is to first, in anticipation of our next meeting of ACIR, let's get the best practices that John has put together out to those organizations that we are required to consult with, just to get that out, put a cover letter on it and just say, look, you know, this is what the law calls for. We just want to give you what is going to be our baseline starting point, which we've already developed as a best practice. Be thinking about that. And as we, you know, in ACIR, and then when we meet the first Friday after the fourth, create a task force from within our group to move that forward separately from the LGF initiative. That probably does make sense. John?
I did neglect, and we need to have included, is the documents that Steve and CCM put together on public meetings as well. So I think that's another valuable, it's fundamental document guidance that has to be part of that. Yep. My apologies for forgetting that, Steve.
Yeah, good. Bob?
I agree with what John and Lyle are saying is how to go about doing this. It makes all sense and worth. And frankly, what John has already done is a good foundation. Just for clarification, since I haven't had an opportunity to read all the details within that implementer bill. Would we take it up specifically for, you know, town meeting be a very different animal than a Board of Selectmen's meeting, for instance, where there are public participation and voting, whereas in a Board of Selectmen's meeting, there's not, or a Planning and Zoning Commission or so on. And so how we go about doing that, how we differentiate between the types of meetings as opposed to the types of entities that have meetings, town meeting be a very specific thing. So what is envisioned? Is this it? What was adopted with the implementer bill? Does it envision that, for instance, town meetings would exist now hybrid as we have done it in Goshen previously? And that's fine to do that, but ACIR is going to put together a group of suggestions for best practices for future? Or are those things, those types of meetings held in abeyance until ACIR does their work and reports in February?
Well, I will, since we were not actively engaged in the negotiation of the bill and the language itself, I'll defer to Martin. But my understanding from having read the bill is that there are very specific provisions that are now codified for how hybrid meetings, that hybrid meeting shall take place using different communication mechanisms. And it differentiates, as Martin has indicated, between those that are regulatory entities in municipalities versus those that are more advisory commissions or committees. It already has been codified as a requirement, but in addition to that having already been codified, there is a demand that ACIR study this and develop recommendations on what they've already done, basically, and evaluate it and report into the General Assembly about what we found, about what are the best practices and what would be the best way to implement.
Okay, so to be clear, the legislation that was adopted requires those regulatory entities to have hybrid now within law are required to, because that was
that's
the
my
debate.
Understanding, unless I'm
whether or not you require or not require, whether it be enabling or required. Martin, can you just clarify that if you would?
Sure. I'm just trying to go back through my notes because we've gone through so many times on this. I believe it's that it wound up being, and Steve Mednick may be able to correct me if I'm wrong going through this. I'm looking through the pieces now. One, this is about public agency meetings. It's not necessarily about town meetings.
Right.
On this, so understand that these provisions are not related to town meetings because of the votes and everything for public, everything else. So this does not apply for, you know, a municipality doing like the town meeting that sense. So the provisions are not in there on that piece. The other is, if I recall correctly, you know, that it was agreed upon, I think, final, that it's a may, not a shall.
Yes, that's correct.
On this as well. So, and that was part of, you know, negotiations back and forth on it, where it was looking at, originally it was proposed as shall, that they must do it, and then it was saying that they may do it, is the way the legislation wound up.
Okay.
And that only goes until June of 22?
Correct. Right, in which case then it will look at whether they're going to make any changes, adoptions, everything else in the next session, you know, at that point there, to move forward, which is part of what obviously the studies, you know, for, and, you know, looking at, you know, problems, anything else that have to be tweaked and adjusted.
And so would it sunset after June 22, if nothing, no action by the legislature is taken?
Correct.
Okay. Just so that we, you know, kind of know the landscape of where we're starting.
Yeah. Thanks for the clarification on that, Martin. Steve. Yep.
Thank you. Which I think puts a lot of pressure on the report that we have to do. It sounds like it will be a central report with regard to consideration of extending the law. And I think that we all have been operating, I mean, we're operating right now under the regimen that we were created during the pandemic, and it's worked pretty well. One of the issues I think the commission is going to have to look at, and I'm not sure whether John Filczek's list includes these things. Have we looked at available technologies that provide for voting remotely, either at town meetings, even though they may or may not be included, but even in a public meeting? There are technologies with trusted identity that have been developed. The U.S. Department of Commerce through NIST has looked at a number of these issues. I assume from the list of things that we have to do that looking at those potential technologies and the cost elements of those to make sure that there's trusted identity so you can actually have votes that are protected would be something we would want to do. So I was simply going to recommend that we look at NIST. I know that an organization I used to be president of and counsel to, the IGIS Institute, working with the Department of Justice, has done some work in this area. So if at some point, you know, we think we need to do that, I have some, I was ombudsman to an organization in NIST. So I have some relationships in the Department of Commerce.
Yeah, area. Thanks for that. I kind of don't want to get down the rabbit hole of what it is that the task force will start doing as part of this meeting, because we can get into that conversation when the task force convenes.
Yeah.
And move forward. So
I didn't want to debate it. I just want to let you know that I have access to those sources. That's all.
Great. Okay.
Terrific. Brendan, just a quick. So my suggestion is we need leadership, a working group, and a work plan.
Right.
Those are the, you know, the three key elements. And the work plan could be quite substantial, but this, I think, would be the point for Bob and others to weigh in to make sure this sort of fits various kinds of realities.
Agreed.
So whatever you want to do about leadership, and then a working group, some of it's statutory, some of it's not, how it relates to ACIR, and then a work plan on, you know, what are the major chunks and how do we end up with February 1 done?
Right. Well, what I'm recommending is that let's do some of the preliminary stuff between now and our next full ACIR meeting.
Right. Right.
Which includes making contact with the FOIC and the Municipal Attorneys Association. And then also talk among ourselves a little bit about,
right,
who might be willing to take that on, maybe put an agenda together, present it to the full ACIR at the July meeting, and then go.
Yep.
If that makes sense. Okay, good. So that sounds like a work plan. I mean, a plan, not a work plan, but a plan anyway, in anticipation of getting this launched as soon as we can. So the other major topic, though, of this meeting that we wanted to discuss was the question of home rule, and putting that discussion together. So I think I'll summarize where I think we are with this based upon previous conversations. perhaps have a couple suggestions on how to proceed. The first thing is that we want to be very brief and concise in terms of the history of the term home rule and where it comes from. We don't want, as Lyle has said repeatedly, you know, we don't want to get into the business of having to do, you know, a full-throated analysis of the entire history of home rule and where it came from. But we do want to at least clarify what it does and does not mean, and have that as a somewhat of a preamble, but then take on a handful of particular topics where the application of the term home rule has been applied, perhaps in some cases misapplied, and how the reality of home rule should apply basically to these different elements, whether it be zoning, whether it be housing, whether it be any one of a number of the other topics. I think the purpose of this meeting today would be to flesh that out a little bit. First, who can give us the, you know, and help develop that historical perspective concisely, precisely for that preamble? And then what are going to be the study elements that we're going to apply that understanding of the term home rule to? I can end my sentence with a preposition. So are we, you know, we had talked at the ACIR meeting about relying on outside folks. We had mentioned Steve's expertise on this topic, and maybe we can prevail upon him to help provide us with that concise summary of the term, right, as part of that preamble. Steve, since I'm volunteering you, maybe you'd want to offer your thoughts on it.
As long as it's concise, I'm happy to do it. I think I can take a run at, and I can run it by everybody even before we meet again, with a paragraph or less that really describes home rule. And I won't get into the elements of it right now, but I think it can be done pretty pretty swiftly. I have a pretty good approach I take with my charter commissions, where I define it for them and try to define it in pretty simple terms. So I think I can utilize that and provide it for you as a very simple prefatory statement to the work that we're going to try to do.
Great. Okay, thank you.
I'll try not to even mention Dylan's rule.
I don't know if you can avoid that. Oh my goodness.
Well, yeah. Maybe Bob Dylan's rule, but the
there you go.
Or the rule in Dylan's case, I guess. We'll figure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, when I discuss brevity and conciseness, you know, I think it needs to be. It needs to elaborate enough on it that we're providing some context, you know, because then that informs the discussion about how it has been misapplied in some cases because people don't understand what the term really means or what it should mean.
Absolutely. I think I can pull that off because I think I can tell you what it doesn't mean. And I can also, I mean, one of the theories, Joel Kogan and I used to talk about this, and he's not here to deny it at this point, and that was that, you know, what it means and what it doesn't mean, and in terms of express authority, implied authority, in terms of lack of prohibition, one of the things I always come across in charter revisions is they'll say to me, well, Steve, you said you can't do recall, or you said you can't do term limits, but such and such a town has term limits in their charter. And then I call the first selectman, one of Francis's towns recently, and we talked it through, and they realized, yeah, it's in our charter, but we had no authority. There was no special act. And then I talked to the chair of the charter commission, and he said, oh, there was no rule that said we couldn't do it. And so that would be one of the things that has to be explained to people is how it works. I think I can do it in two or three paragraphs. Now I'm up with three paragraphs. I don't think it has to be a long explication, but I think you can lay it out pretty clearly. I could also write you a full legal brief, but I that's not what we want. I think I will sit down and see if I can put it together in several paragraphs. And if I have everybody's emails, I'll run drafts by so everybody can look at it. So it becomes kind of a collective project, but I'm willing to take a first run at it.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. Other comments? Rick?
Hey, Brendan, I just want to say thank you to Steve. Bruce has shared some of the earlier reports from the 60s and the 80s, and they're very good, and I read them all, and I'm somewhat informed about these issues, but oftentimes finishing the report, it still wasn't totally clear to me exactly what home rule means and what we can and cannot do. And if Steve can help us put something together that's concise and much clearer, he'd be doing a great service for this whole discussion. So thank you.
Okay. Yep.
And if I could just add one thing.
Yeah, Bob, I'm sorry. Sure.
In part of that, I think what would be very helpful is if you had some examples, for instance, land use, planning and zoning commissions. There are some things within statute that give authority to the planning and zoning commission that may be construed as home rule, but they're still constrained by the statute in what they can do generally. And so examples would be very helpful if you took, say, a planning and zoning commission and kind of explain how there's authority to do certain things, but it doesn't reach to the point of home rule, or just something to put it in context.
Well, you know, what I suggest, Bob, is that's actually the next thing that we're going to talk about at this meeting, which is what are the subject areas where we take Steve's definition and apply it to, right? Yep. So I think one of the other agenda items now for us today is to decide what are those topic areas where it's really important for us to understand what Steve's telling us about what home rule is and what it is not. And so I'd recommend what you're suggesting is something that is one of the topics that we apply it to. Steve?
Can I also say, Brendan, Mr. Speaker, sorry, that
I'm not anymore.
Mr. Statesman, what Bob was saying really illustrates one of the conundrum involving this area. Home rule is nothing other than those laws that give us an express grant of authority. So when a planning and zoning commission is operating under a statute, that is an express grant of authority, and that is part of the dialogue of home rule. There are no implied powers for local governments. That's why the term, what you'll see in my summary, is that home rule is a misnomer. It implies from the broad title that we have some special authority, but we only have that authority which is expressly granted by the state. And that, I think, that's the explicit point that has to be made in any analysis on home rule, that once you get beyond express grants of authority, you can only kind of imply the things that come out of those express grants. So I think it was a good illustration, Bob, and thank you for that.
Margaret.
Yes, just a little note. In Weston, we had two different charter. We went over the charter twice because, never mind, they missed the deadline on some things. But it was made up of very good lawyers that we had there. And one thing I noticed was there was an asterisk that began, and anything that isn't mentioned here is you got to follow the state kind of thing. You know, so it was, I think, you know, what you're saying was right, yeah. It's, you know, if it doesn't say it, you can't do it.
Right.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So let's get into that then. What do we think are the topics to which we want to apply the clarification, we'll call it that, that Steve will be able to provide us? What are the topic areas? I think, you know, Bob's already identified land use.
Yep.
Missions generally.
I'd say land use and shared services to start with. You know, the barriers to engaging in consolidation or sharing of services. We keep, you know, referring back to earlier statutes that say there are no barriers. Well, there are barriers. But I think shared services and reiterating that in terms of consolidation, the land use and shared services we might talk to.
I would like to add to that, if I could, town ordinance. As a statutory municipality, I often have people think that we can, as a municipality, prohibit or do some other thing that we're not enabled to do. And because we're able to create ordinances within parameters, that's misconstrued, thinking, well, we have home rule that we can decide what happens within our confines of our borders. And that's just not true. And that's often misconstrued by townspeople on what we can do.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, that may be the first thing. That may be the first topic to take on.
Yeah.
But Steve made the point, I think, Bob, that goes to yours, which is home rules within an express grant of authority. You know, and going back to charter cities, 1,000 years ago, they were granted a royal charter. So it always came from somewhere. They weren't independent. They had an express grant of charters. And it was like in Hartford, we had a charter from King Charles II, you know, and so we had a charter and they wanted to take it back. Oh, no, actually, Charles II wanted to take it back. But we had a royal charter that gave independence to the Connecticut colony and they wanted to remove it. So it comes to your point, Steve, and to yours, Bob, there's always parameters. You can't just, I mean, it's like one of my favorites in Marin County in California decided to be a nuclear free zone by local ordinance. So, you know, the Navy just sort of said, never mind. You know, they ignored them completely. So there's always parameters.
Right. Francis?
Yes, and I think it would be helpful in this introduction to clarify the distinction between home rule and local control, that they're used synonymously, but they're not the same thing.
Yeah, that's a great point. Can you expand on that a little bit, Francis? That's a great point.
Well, home rule is a legal framework in which we have these express grants of authority. Local control is whether you, if you have the authority, if you decide to exercise it locally. And it's also a kind of a larger discussion about where the appropriate or best place to exercise this authority is, regardless of the legal framework. So, you know, the municipality may or may not do something independent. If they have the authority, they don't have to necessarily do it unless they're required, unless it's a mandate. So I do think it's an important distinction and one that people often confuse.
You could use that for zoning, for instance. There is local control to determine the zones and the appropriateness of those zones and where they're placed. But that's not home rule, because that's enabled by Section 8 that allows you to do that.
Exactly. And some municipalities have decided not to zone.
Right. So maybe, Steve, that becomes a function of that preamble.
Yeah.
It's a great point that Francis is raising. Yeah.
I talk to Francis all the time. I'm sure he'll break it down for me.
Rick?
If I'm jumping the gun, please cut me off. But so I agree with what Lyle just said with regard to the two topics we try to focus on at the outset. How can we handle, for example, the land use issue in a way that it can be really constructive? So, for example, taking the legislation that was so contentious this last session, what if the state determined that the need for more affordable housing in more different locations was in the interest of the state as a whole and the people of the state? How would that determination by the state government impact on what has typically been pretty much exclusively local decisions with regard to land use? Is there a way to talk about that topic in the most constructive useful way so that people can understand when the state's interest may come into play when it relates to land use decisions.
John, are you responding to Rick's question?
Plus one. I think that's what Steve can correct me, and please do. 8-30G is trying to do that, is to set that policy. And you saw the date from the desegregate CT legislation, where the kind of trying to broaden some of that out and the acrimony that created. The zoning reforms, a lot of those zoning reforms were in a bill the previous year and would have passed without any discussion. The Connecticut chapter of APA brought forward was probably going to come out of committee without dissent and go through the House and the Senate. But when the ADU issue was added in and a few other pieces, then it became very political with this local control home rule piece, which has unfortunately become a point of contention. And I'm not sure right now how we move away from that, at least in the immediate. We do have each town through a law that was passed in 2017 doing their individual housing plans, which may help, hopefully. I wish it was done regionally. I think if the state, for instance, there's an example, if each COG was asked to create a regional housing plan rather than 169 towns create an individual plan, it would have served the state better and what you're speaking to. That's my point there. We do have state policy, but it clearly hasn't worked.
If I could add to John's comment, we are in Goshen working on our plan now. And it gets really back to the whole question of what we as a municipality have the authority to do. I have some people sniping from the bushes on this pretty substantially, even to doing substantial FOIs because they're not pleased about our creating a plan. Getting back to that question is going to be helpful. What do we have the authority to do? What do we not have the authority to do? And that goes across the board. The housing issue is an issue that is not going to go away. In the Waterbury paper today, there was an article about the town of Salisbury having their decision to create an affordable housing in an incentive housing zone being challenged in Superior Court. That is something that's just going on. Our COG is being maligned by individuals who think the COG has too much power and it's the COG that is that overreaching entity that's making the towns do things. That whole question of home rule versus what we can and cannot do and how that works, just whether people listen or not, we can't do anything about that, but it'll be really helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Yeah. I just want to recognize Francis.
Yes, thanks, Brendan. You talked about zoning, which is, delegated to the town through home rule. And people said, well, zoning is so stringent, perhaps overly so in Connecticut compared to other states. What they're missing out on is the broader umbrella of land use regulation. Now, if they look at Vermont is much laxer. Well, actually, no. Vermont has far more stringent land use regulation at the state level. And people forget, regardless of how we divide things up with home rule and the value of local control and whatnot, what really matters is the cumulative impact of regulation at all levels. You can't compare a municipality in Connecticut with its home rule and zoning to one in Vermont where the state does so much more and very restrictively compared to Connecticut. So I think it's very important that we, when talking about this, show the entire structure from a municipality up to the state and not just focus on one level.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. And I'm assuming that you mean that in terms of applying it to specific mm-hmm. areas.
Yes. I mean, in this case I'm giving here, Vermont, developers would probably kick and scream if we tried to implement the same land use regulations at the state level they have in Vermont.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm.
Can we do that in some sort of a simple, easily understood flowchart? Or is that oversimplified?
Well, I'm assuming in each one of these subject areas, we'll be able to do that, right? Because it's not going to be the same. The application of the definitions that Steve's providing us are not going to be the same in every subject area. So, yes, I think the answer to your question is yes. When we talk about the implications of land use, local land use regulations, yeah, you know, then there's a flow chart. Steve, you're muted.
Thank you. Two things. First, going to Lyle's point regarding shared services, one of the things you need to address in the area of shared services is the impact of state law, including MIRA, on the ability to provide shared services. So that really needs to be part of any examination of shared services. It's an issue that I've been dealing with. In fact, I have the second thing I was going to say is I have to run because I have a brief due today, and it addresses that issue. So it's an issue that's right at the top of my mind. So I didn't want to simply go to the chat room and say I had to leave. I told Brendan today I was under a constraint, but I accept the fact that you will probably assign me a bunch of things when I get off the screen. We'll talk to Brendan about the volume of it. But I'm very happy to be working with this group, and I didn't want you to think that my departure is a function of boredom. I'm really under a horrible, I'm under, my co-counsel has let me down. I got to get some stuff done.
Got it. Understood.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for joining. Margaret?
Yes, just a bit here. I saw something in a paper about one of the, one of the way to the, everybody has to do affordable housing rules to a comment that now they're realizing, oh, gee, but if there isn't any infrastructure, you can't make meaningful change. So, because all of this is, so there should be something about a cost-benefit analysis, what is the point of having one size fits all to the state of Connecticut, which is not rolling in money forever,
Well, to be honest, I think we'd want to steer clear of that, to put it bluntly. I don't know that we necessarily want to be weighing in on the relative social benefits or deficits of particular policies. I think really what we're trying to do is say, look, as you would analyze this topic area, here are the guardrails that we would apply based upon the law. What is home rule? What is, as Francis has pointed out, local control? Mm-hmm. And, without getting into the vagaries of, is it a good idea to have, a TOD development in your town when you don't have the infrastructure to support it, that kind of thing. That's kind of not what this is about. I think it's really just more about helping to define for people what are the guardrails that they can either use so that it's not being misused or misapplied as a statement that, we don't do that because here in our town, we have local control over that topic. That's really what we're trying to help people avoid, I think.
Sure. Okay. It's just a thought. That's all.
Sure. Thanks. John?
I think one of the areas that falls underneath any of the individual subject areas is the structure of the statutes now as it relates to this. Part of the problems with local control, home rule, once we've defined it, automatically folks will go to the Section 7, but then there's stuff in 8 and any number of other areas. And, you know, as the statutes are, they've just been built up over decades. And these various powers or delegations of authority are scattered across the statutes. I was on a call just before this one dealing with agriculture. Section 1-1Q, the state definition of agriculture, the last line says any town in the state can define it in its own terms for zoning. That's a local authority that's been granted by the state, and it causes havoc. You've got to know to go to Section 1. The power is enumerated in Section 7. You know, there's turnovers all the time. I've said many times, I've now worked for 84 different first selectmen. They come and they go, and you know, a new one goes, well, where's the owner's manual? How do I operate? You know, and everything's not clean where it is. So you go to Section 7-148, whatever it is, double C, you can work together, but you go to 8-31 double B and you move on. And, you know, there, and one of those, I guess what I'm getting to is we may want to look at a movement of a reshuffling of the statute just to make it more logical so that it is a little more user friendly, if you will. So we don't have the confusion there, which I think exists on the part of many elected officials, that they only look at one section and say, oh, I can do this or I can't do that. Well, there's three other sections that come into play.
Right.
And if they have a good town attorney like Steve, they're in good shape. If they make their own random decision, then they come to Steve after they've been sued.
Right.
You know, and I guess either way, it's good if you're a municipal attorney.
Right.
Well, maybe not so good if you're a town.
Yeah.
So I guess looking at the related structural piece, because we don't tend to reshuffle the statute. We tend to just add and subtract as to where they are. And municipal powers in particular is just a laundry list of things that really doesn't make a lot of sense sometimes.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Bob?
And I want to agree with you, Brendan, on certainly on how we go about doing it. If we don't choose a dog in this fight, I think that our results and what we put forward be more accepted, so that we don't get into whether it's appropriate to dictate housing here or there or whatever the subject matter may be. And then I think we're much better off, and what we put forward will be much better received at the end of the day. And then I would add to what John says, there's another factor in there, particularly for statutory municipalities and boards of selectmen. It was always thought that the Board of Selectmen had the authority to determine whether a petition for town meeting was appropriate or not. And the Supreme Court actually ruled that the authorities vested in the Board of Selectmen are loaned, essentially, for lack of a general term, and that the electorate through the town meeting can always take those back and make decisions. This is in a case where a local planner was asked to be relieved of their position, and the board chose not to call a town meeting. The Supreme Court ruled they had to have a town meeting, and that local planner was dismissed.
Right.
So that adds a little complicated twist as well.
Right. Right. Francis?
Yes, thanks, Brendan. I wonder, is there an index of municipal powers everywhere? Or would it be helpful for us to help put together an index, like a, you know, a driver's guide for the, or reference guide for, you know, local governments?
I was thinking of the same thing, Francis.
That's what we need the Institute of Public Service. That's what they used to do. And that's a whole nother topic we've been talking about.
You're right. And you're getting into what it was going to be my next topic. I don't want to jump into it just yet, but yeah, but yes, duly noted. And I think that would be the next logical thing for us to perhaps offer up. But before we jump into that, I just kind of want to keep us focused on what the subject areas might be. I think we've identified three now, land use, shared services, and Bob's suggestion with regard to town ordinances. That's a pretty broad, those, each of those topics is pretty broad, because the, you know, some of the other stuff that we've, you know, that would fall under maybe any one of those topics would be the question of, you know, policing, you know, public safety, and health departments and those kinds of things. Would housing in itself be a standalone topic versus land use generally? Given the attention that's been drawn, I mean, the correlation has been made between zoning and housing, but would housing fall under land use, essentially?
If our intent is to put something together to better explain local control, home rule, if we take land use generally and address that, then we do address the housing issue without actually bringing attention to the housing industry and issue and whether or not we're taking it off. And so those three things encompass much. Other thing that I don't know we get into, and maybe the first three are illustrative enough to be able to show how that works, but one thing that I deal with is people thinking that I can, through the Board of Selectmen, create any rule on our local roads, where I cannot. Although I am the traffic authority, I have to follow what the Department of Transportation has for rules. We can't just change a speed limit or, you know, put up signs or do things without some consultation and agreement with the Department of Transportation. But that really, you know, those, you get into more of that if we can just explain what our authority is in the home rule and local control.
Well, and yeah, thanks for that, Bob. And the other thing I was going to suggest perhaps as a topic, but I don't know what you guys think, is the question of finances, municipal finances, in terms of what authority you do have, you know, because this will get this in theory, I'm thinking in my mind that would get into the question of local taxation, you know, sales taxes, other things, which we all know towns can't do on their own. But what are the other guardrails for what a town can do in terms of raising revenue and managing its own finances in terms of bonding, in terms of pension issues, those kinds of things? Do you think that's a topic that's applicable, or is that?
I think it would be a good topic, and maybe touches this one also. I think that runs into that a study that would be great from the Institute, that type of study as well. Yeah. Education would be another area.
Absolutely.
We could cover with this topic. There's a lot of assumptions what a Board of Education can do. Some of them are right, some of them are wrong, as usual.
Right. So by my count, then, if finance is one, education is a second, separate. Is that what you're suggesting, John?
Yeah, I think the finance, you know, especially there's a lot of confusion as to who's actually responsible for the construction of a local budget for a non-charter town. Is it Board of Finance's budget, or is it the First Selectman's budget? Most First Selectmen would say it's my budget. And
although, those documents from the Institute, as we mentioned last time, conflict with one another.
Yeah.
On that subject.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's not only the crafting of the budget, but once the budget is crafted, adopted by town meeting, whose responsibility it is to manage that budget going forward. And so even municipalities close to us have a different opinion than what we do.
Yeah. Some of those practices have devolved or evolved, however you want to look at it, into
absolutely
this is how they do it, and it varies by it varies very much by town.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I'm going to add too, with respect to finance, as you know, municipalities in Connecticut are unusually dependent on the property tax, but there are other options, and there are differences of opinion about to what extent municipality can diversify revenue sources. So that could be helpful too.
That's really where I was going with that. Right. Right. Yeah. Agreed. So I'm trying to also frame out a little bit about how we're going to break this up into these individual topics. We can defer a little bit until we get the product from Steve as far as the preamble goes, but it also seems to me that we should perhaps start organizing around these different topic areas, maybe break it out so somebody is sort of leading the discussion on this, on each of these particular topics, subtopics. Let me put a pin in that for a second. The other thing that I wanted to raise was the fact that, I think Bruce was the one who pointed it out to us. It is now statutorily the case that the Institute for local and I forget the name of the organization, but the, or the entity, but that institute that was, that is, has been housed at Central Connecticut State University has now been rolled over to UConn.
Right.
So UConn is now the repository, presumably, of all things related to local and regional government.
Yep.
Lyle, can you shed some light on that? As sure. To, maybe we should be reaching out to them too.
I spoke to Professor Al-Qadri about this.
Yeah,
it's the Institute for Municipal and Regional Policy,
right?
AMRP, and I was on it with Ned Lamont 1,000 years ago. So, yeah, that's moving over to UConn and the Department of Public Policy. Details to follow. So obviously, I guess the law comes into effect July 1, but they're going to be working on that. But I think an early outreach to Professor Al-Qadri on this topic and ACIR generally and the IMRP would be well worth it. So right. I was going to bring that up later. But so Professor Al-Qadri, who we've had as an ACIR guest in the past, is the point person on this. So we know who to talk to, and I would suggest that we talk to him soon. He is on a vacation for 2 weeks, but he will be back. So wanted to fill you in, but I had talked to him briefly about this this week.
Great. Okay. All right. Well, that's great. And if you can, yep. You can follow up with him when he's back.
Sure. I'd be happy to if you'd like.
Great. And so we have five potential topics on this. Again, what's the group's feeling about this? Should we wait a little bit until we see what Steve is able to provide us in terms of a preamble and guidance? Or do we want to break up some of these responsibilities now? I mean, I'm a land use attorney. I can start taking on some of the land use stuff. But I don't know if folks have any inclination on how to proceed as far as, how to break up these different topics.
I guess my suggestion is, frankly, that the preamble won't give us much guidance. I wish it would, but I don't think it will. I think it will state where we are. So I would suggest a point person in each area could do some initial brainstorming or invite people to brainstorm with them on the issues in terms of what's emerging and what the issues are. And I think that would be, I don't think we need to, I guess my 2 cents worth, at least one vote is, I don't think we need to wait for Steve's, very nice summary of the issue. So that's my 2 cents.
Okay. Well, then I've got, so I've got a few thoughts as to who might be good on different topics, but,
and you're thinking of appointing volunteers. Is this like when you were a speaker?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to go too far with that, but yeah, I think, I think first of all, someone, it doesn't need to be, obviously it doesn't need to be ACIR related either. For example, town ordinances, that topic that Bob was raising, I mean, there are folks at CAMA who I think have a lot of expertise on this, Steve included, but others as well. CAMA being the Connecticut Association of Municipal Attorneys. I would think that they would be particularly, they could be particularly helpful. And maybe there's one person who's kind of a designated conduit to CAMA to help us on that front. I'm thinking of Lon Seidman is great on the education stuff. He's probably spent more time on that topic than any of us have as far as what the relationship is there. Same is true with finances and shared services. We could probably reach out to the RESC Alliance and to the Council of Governments folks. Maybe we could be identifying individuals who we could ask to, if they volunteer to take the lead on these particular topic areas, unless somebody wants to volunteer today along those fronts. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that in itself is a little bit of a task, which I'll take on as far as trying to reach out to folks, to see who might be willing to, help take the lead, on each of these topic areas. So that's my job. Anything else? I wanted to keep this short and sweet today, but are there any other topics that we should be raising before we adjourn the subcommittee meeting?
Hey, Brendan, I just wanted to, it's really exciting that the 6448 language made it into the implementer. And I have a feeling you had something to do with that. Maybe some other people on this call too. I just wanted to say thank you and congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Rick. The extent of my involvement was I sent one text to the speaker to advocate on behalf of ACIR as his appointee to ACIR and as chair, that it be included. And he responded saying, yep, it's on the list. And that's all I needed to do. So that was the extent of my involvement.
That may be enough.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, yeah. I'm sure that the chairs of planning and development and Martin and the governors, this, by the way, this is the reason why early on when we talked about this last fall, the importance of riding along the governor's coattails and incorporating our language into the governor's bill.
Yep.
That's exactly why I was recommending that, because it was, if it's in the governor's bill, it has legs, right? If it's just our initiative and, a little orphan on its own, it probably was not going to get the attention. Right.
And just to put this in a larger context, it's a few years now, but Brendan, that transition committee for Governor Lamont, a lot of what we recommended is now official. Our rejuvenated ACIR and all the good work and OPM that's being done, and now the RPIP, it's nice to take a minute to just appreciate that a lot of important things.
Good point.
Happened over the last couple of years. So,
yep.
Great. Good point. Good. Yeah.
One
satisfying.
We may want to touch on is as it evolves with the American Rescue Plan Act and how Connecticut's going to allocate its resources there as a state, which they're going to come together in August or something, and what role in terms of the delivery of services or the rethinking of the delivery of services at a state level or at the local level, those funds could be used to facilitate change. Going back to the Moore Commission and other ideas that have bubbled up over time, but we just couldn't fund them or have the opportunity to them, whether it's, we look at 911 or health departments or any number of things to take those maps I made and make them a little more logical. We're not going to have this kind of this type of resource available to us to perhaps change the course of the state.
Yep.
So that may be something we want to take a look at.
That's a great point, John. Yeah.
If I could just coattailed on John's point, there's $691 million of so-called county funds in ARPA, which I think CCM was doing the instrumental work in getting that done. And one of the things that some of the COGS are advocating is that we set aside on a voluntary basis 2% of those funds for regional priorities. And it sort of relates to John's thing. Many things can't be done town by town. You really don't want to do broadband one town at a time. We can go down a long list where you can do it one town at a time, but it makes a lot more sense to have a regional game plan. So I just wanted to give you a heads up that we're still talking with the ARPA CCM group on this about doing some of the things John's saying of setting some of these regional priorities, giving them more legs. And here's the bottom line, just to take broadband, for example. Even if the federal initiative passes and even if the state stands up, we're not going to have enough money to fix this. In other words, we still have urban deserts and we have rural deserts for broadband. And even the funding I've seen on the table is not enough to get the job done. So this would help us to sort of get across the finish line on some of those regional priorities. So I just wanted to add to what John was saying about redesign, but there's an opportunity in the ARPA funds to use it to strengthen what Rick had just said in terms of the governor's transition document to go a little further on some of these things. And again, I saw a comment in a chapter I was reviewing about another state, which shall remain nameless, but it said it's program rich and system poor. We are program rich and sometimes we don't have systems to do this, but this 2% might be a way of doing that. And I just wanted to add to that. So just so no one's surprised that we're advocating for that. And we have not yet been told no to go away. So we're still working it.
Good.
If I could just comment once on that particular issue, particularly with ARPA, so that the county allocation is actually distributed to the municipalities. And I think we just have to be cognizant of the fact that the federal legislation did not allow the state to change what Treasury has decided
to be
done. So we in Goshen today received our local and county allocation in our bank account. And so we are having a discussion on how we utilize that.
Yep.
I'm not in favor or against any of that. And I think the broadband is a very important issue and it does need to be much more large an issue than just a municipality. But we should just be mindful that on the state ARP, those funds, we could maybe have some influence with the governor and the legislature on how those funds are used. But then it becomes much more kind of cajoling, if you will, for the municipalities. Yep.
Absolutely. And I understand that it's not only the Treasury rules, it was statutory. So I think the direction of the funds is to the towns. But our 38 towns get together and do things anyway. So we have, you know, solid waste initiatives. We have public safety initiatives. None of those things are mandated by law. They're initiatives from the town. So this is another example where towns might get together and say, look, you know, let's fill in the broadband rural areas. Let's fill in the broadband urban areas. So it would be, as you say, purely voluntary. I know the town's going to cash the check. I'm fully aware of that. And that's good. But I'm not speaking to the any mandates or what have you. And the feds did not want the state interfering with the way the funds flowed, bluntly. I think that's sort of what went on. They wanted them to flow directly to the municipalities. And that's clear.
And maybe that's a good subject, Bruce, if you can remind us all about this. Maybe that's a good topic to bring up at the full ACIR meeting next month. To just kind of talk about what the status of that is.
Yeah, and the whole ARPA thing. Yeah, it'd be great. I got to jump off here, Mr. Sheriff.
Me too.
I would just suggest that, you know, if before the next meeting, just the governor has a 41-page call it a summary of his recommendations for the use of the monies.
Yep.
The legislature still does not have theirs finalized, but they have to kind of work as that as a base document. I think that would be a good document for everyone to be familiar with. It's very readable.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah.
Can Bruce, I haven't seen that. Can maybe Bruce send that to us?
Yeah, if Bruce could do that, that'd be great to all of us.
I will do that.
And also, Bruce, if you need Steve Mednick's email, I know he mentioned he'd like to have access to folks' emails. for when he produces a product. I'm happy to get that to you if that's helpful. If you don't know,
I do have his email. The question I would pose to you or to the group is, should I just include those who are at the meeting today? My preference would be to include all ACIR members plus the non-members who've sure. been at this and previous meetings.
Yeah.
2 cents worth. I would add everybody.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Very good.
Great. Thank you all. Thanks for the time this morning. And we got a little work to do. And we'll see you. Well, we'll be in touch over the course of the next few weeks, but before
Sounds good.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
And ladies.
Thank you.